Resonance Rewind with Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Jenny Bill, and every so often some delightful guests from the cosmos.
Be kind. Resonance Rewind.
Of course, Robert Butler, I think rightly, television royalty, Robert Butler. Why? Well, he directed the pilot episode of Star Trek, the original series. He directed the first episode of Batman. And here he is directing, apart from lots of work on Hill Street Blues and other great series, directing the pilot episode of Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. I'm going to find out what Kathy Manso makes of this icon of American culture, Lois Lane, and more, of course, in this Terry Hatcher and Dean Cain superhero rom-com, as Deborah Levine billed it at the time and pitched it in the 1990s when it launched in 1993.
Well, I'm not getting too much of the com, but maybe some of the jokes are outdated, so that could be a me thing. but, you know, it's funny that you pointed out that it's the same director that also did Batman, because I was like, these transitions are very Batman-like, so I did feel that way, especially with the angle of the camera. So that was a huge focus for me and everything that's kind of going with it. I think my honest opinion overall of it was it just brought me back to, I think I like Smallville better. That's my honest opinion. I like
that's
that.
That's next week, Kathy. Rendition. That's next week where we look at Smallville.
Well, I'll hold my excitement for them. But I think... Yeah, I wasn't always engaged with it. I was getting very easily lost. And I do really enjoy the superhero Superman. I know a lot of people will argue, oh, he's a very basic superhero, but I kind of enjoy the concept. You know, it's where you can build from there. And he's an alien. I like the twist of that. And I also really enjoyed that in this version of it, Lois was like a strong female character. She could fight. So I appreciate more of a fighter and opinionated woman than just a damsel in distress situation. Although she was never really too damsel-y in the cartoon. I mean, a little bit. She had to be rescued, but she still was a journalist.
We saw a number of incarnations of women on screen, and I didn't do the Bechdel test, but I suspect it might. Possibly not. Tracy Scoggins, of course, playing the somewhat voracious fully formed Cat Grant, obviously with eyes initially for Clark Kent. Terry Hatcher, of course, portraying Lois Lane. We also, of course, had Kay Callan as Martha Kent, who helps actually choose the costume for Superman. That's before we even go on to the villains of Kim Johnston Ulrich as Dr. Antoinette Baines, and many other folk, including, of course, much beloved of Star Trek the Motion Picture fans, directed, of course, by another Robert, but not Robert Butler this time, Robert Wise, the late superb Indian actress Persis Khambatta, who makes an appearance as the chairperson. I mean, I think certainly American television had been, I wouldn't say pioneering in terms of this, but the balances of the genders were very much in place with respect to this. Without, dare I say, the kind of the huge furore that might have occurred when people said, look, we've got balanced gender here. They just seem to fit naturally into place, I feel.
Yeah, I agree. I think you can tell that there was like, they were trying. There's an attempt. There, you know, it's a step in the right direction. And that's why I don't mean to judge it too harshly, because I know this is coming from the early 90s. And, you know, we've come a really long way from then. So I think definitely it was a correct way to kind of introduce this.
It was an update. I mean, clearly at this stage, Superman would have been, let me see, quick calculation, about 60 years old, basically. The original cartoon.
Aliens, do they age? I mean...
Well, certainly Perry White does, as indeed does Jimmy Olsen. And I feel that although Mark McClure seemed to really get capture Jimmy Olsen's incarnation in the Superman movie, which, of course, we looked at a while back in Resonance Rewind, I thought Jimmy... I mean, the first character we actually encounter of any note, really, is Lois Lane, followed by, of course, Jimmy Olsen. And his, of course, rationale is he uses the bat, he rips the disguise from Lois Lane. He takes the beard from the bearded lady. And we get this notion that, yeah, this is clearly a contemporary with it scenario. We're not seeing any sense of the Noel Neal Lois Lane of the 1950s. We are seeing evidence, I do feel Terry Hatcher probably owes quite a lot to not to Terry Hatcher, but to Margot Kidder's incarnation of Lois Lane in the movies by the Alexander Salkind. And there seems to be something about this. As we say, this is the start of a Superman trilogy, because next week we look at Smallville. The following week we're looking at Superman and Lois, as opposed to Lois and Clark. A new incarnation of the whole thing, in which, in this particular case, they're both married, and they have, well, married to each other, and they have two super children, as you'd expect. Well, actually one child, but no spoilers, and that's for a fortnight's time. So given all of that that's actually there, and we haven't even discussed John Shea as the villainous, nefarious Lex Luthor, possibly an early template for some Donald Trump antics, I'm just saying, in terms of his ways and wanting to view Metropolis from the tower, his favorite view of Metropolis, where basically the reason he likes it is because everybody has to look up to him. Were those areas which you thought, yeah, it's kind of working, and yet, you know, it's just not quite hitting the mark?
Well, I mean, I think Lex Luthor was probably a really strong character in this. I mean, there were definitely times where I was like, yeah, I hate this guy. But like, in the right way, as you should. You know, he's interrupting Lois. Just very, very typical male behavior. Like, well, this is a date. Like, let's just be very apparent of this. This is not an interview, or you know, kind of. So he does a really good job asserting the villain male dominance in this situation. And also, I think I was like, I knew when it was Lex Luthor, but part of me was like, he has hair. That's a power move. just waiting for that hair. Wonder where that's going to go. So, but I think he did a good job in the role that he was given. Of course, there could always be rooms for improvement, but as this is the first episode watching in this, and he's already kind of taking the... I don't want to say misogynistic too much. I mean, he is, but he does work with other, you know, other females, but he still uses it for his own.
And he also blows up one of those females when she effectively basically goes past her sell-by date or becomes of no use to them. So you've got a disposability factor then, which surely demonstrates this is not a nice person.
Sure. I mean, if that's not a form of feminism, meaning he'll blow up anyone, male or woman, I just don't know what is.
The notion of the space shuttle astronauts, and clearly this is something which is being released, I think, some 5 or 6 years after the Challenger space disaster of 1987. So clearly sensitivities to the space shuttle, sensitivities to the whole space program, very much the fore here. Did you feel that was handled effectively? I mean, ultimately, of course, it's Superman who delivers the package, delivers the cargo, effectively preventing Lex Luthor from privatizing space, something which arguably Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk have now currently actually started doing.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's an interesting thing, because at the end of the day, although we always look at Superman as a positive character, because he is, you know, he has the right intentions, he's still
a farm boy from Kansas.
Yeah, but he's still a vigilante, you know. He's a very intelligent vigilante, you know. He's someone who's obviously, and they did a good job showing that here, he's well educated, he's studied, he's not just going, and he has humble beginnings, which kind of is a pro as well, kind of helps him in this situation. But he's got a lot of secrets of his own, and not just like the whole deception of his of who he is, but like secrets about his own personality in general that are slowly kind of appearing when he thinks it's appropriate. But this is the question though. Like, he makes a lot of decisions for the greater good, and as we've learned with history, time, things, we typically like to make those good decisions with other people, usually people of authority. And I know he'll eventually get into a role like that, and I know that's like half the battle of him, but it's like, who assigned him to do this? And no one. He kind of takes it upon himself, and granted, he is the hero in this situation, but all it takes is one slip up mistake, and it could be completely unintentional, because that's how life works, where the community will definitely go against him.
Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall, Clark Gable and Carol Lombard. Hollywood is jam-packed full up to the present day, arguably with the likes of George Clooney and Julia Roberts, with the romantic comedy aspect. In TV terms, of course, this was a series that emerged several years after Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd had been moonlighting. And of course, the will they, won't they aspect of the series was effectively what seemed to keep the series propelled. When they actually did, effectively the viewers lost interest. Do you feel that actually what we have here with respect to the romantic comedy, because the focus, I mean, the title itself reveals a whole range of things. In fact, in Britain, they had to stick on The New Adventures of Superman because they felt nobody would understand Lois and Clark. They would have thought it's about two pioneering American explorers. Of course, that's Lewis and Clark, not Lois and Clark, but, you know, there you go.
It would be Lewis, yes.
Yeah. Do you think that from that point of view, it works, and that approach that we've always had with respect to the incarnation of Lois Lane? I mean, I'm thinking of a piece we're developing at present for delivery, hopefully next year, as part of a course on Journalists on Screen, that actually what we see here is actually fun, it's frothy, but it's also saying something about, again, how relationships can develop and unfold in a way which, yes, you can have a relationship with a man who wears his underpants outside his trousers.
I mean, I think it's hard to gauge it since this is the first episode that we're watching, the pilot. And for there to be that kind of relationship and chemistry, I think it kind of grows. And I hope it kind of grows as the season grows. And it shows, like, there's been successful episodes and it went on for a little bit. But I think they put the groundwork. There's a very much a good understanding of how did they meet, why, and usually the comedy comes into like this person doesn't want this person in their life, and then they're kind of like inching their way in to be accepted into their life, and there's a formula, and I see that the relationship can grow, but like I didn't find a lot of things too comedic, you know. I mean, a little sassy, a little cheeky.
How about Cat Grant and her femme fatale?
I think I found that entertaining for not the reasons they wanted it to be entertaining.
daring costume choice, I thought. Daring costume choice.
I did appreciate the line, "This is the second time I'm asking you out, and there's usually not a third." I was like, "Oh, dang, okay." I mean, I appreciate it, but I think it's also target audience too. I think women above the age of 30 wouldn't waste their time typically. They move on, hopefully. Strong, independent women, that is. Granted, I can't speak for all of them. I'm just one. But I think you just kind of, if you keep watching this episode or episodes and more, you're like, come on, give her a chance. But you kind of already know from the beginning, and especially like just if anyone's ever seen a comic strip of Superman, you know that the end game is going to be Lois and Clark.
And of course, we do, I think, have an appearance of Lucy Lane, Lois's sister, played by Elizabeth Barondez as well, which probably is worthy of mention. Okay, let's go favourite characters. Which one or ones or honourable mentions are you going to provide for this particular analysis?
I don't know. I was thinking about this when I was watching it, and I just wish I engaged more with it. I really tried my best to take this in as much as I could. I I'm gonna say I liked his parents. I appreciated the like the parents of Clark Kent, Mr. and Mrs. Kent. I like that he was
Jonathan
still
and Martha. Eddie Jones yes, playing Jonathan and Martha, as we said, played by Kay Cowan.
Yeah, I did appreciate, I think they played their roles really well. They're parents that are definitely relatable. and with the simple objective of Clark comes first, you know, his safety is important.
And of course, a real shift from the accepted canon, because clearly, even with the movies, we had the notion that either Jonathan had passed away or Martha or both, and that effectively Clark was orphaned, which is a clear characteristic of superheroes, that technically they are orphaned. And of course, he would be doubly orphaned, orphaned from Jor-El and Lara, and then orphaned from his adopted parents as well. So the fact that they are around throughout the series, I think, was a bold move and obviously addresses the whole in-law question in other areas as well.
Well, it also makes it less dark, because this issue, I mean, there are going to be incidents. There's death, you know, we saw in this episode, it happened, the murder or the suicide, depending on who you believe or trust. But it's, I don't think it would have been necessary to have his parents killed off. And he's already technically abandoned as an alien. so he had to go through a lot to figure out who he is. And he still is. He still has to deal with the secret. And how he, that's kind of his daily battle, like how much of himself can he reveal?
And the sense of, again, I think a very significant scene was where he's basically bored out of his mind in his one bedroom apartment, and he literally walks up the wall, which again, interesting shots from that perspective, but it did actually, I think, reveal some of the notion of what do you do when you've got superpowers and, you know, nowhere to call.
Well, and, you know, honestly, that was probably one of my favorite things, because it really addresses something like, this is a person who is, it's kind of like a genius without, I know he doesn't play the role of a genius, but he's very educated and intelligent. But geniuses are, statistically, they're typically more depressed because they know too much, right? And when you know too much, it kind of takes away a bit of the excitement. That's why we have the expression ignorance is bliss a little bit, you know, it keeps you surprised, even though some people might not be surprised. So I think the perspective of what do you do when you can do anything, it kind of gets eliminated, you know, he can go anywhere in the world at any given point in time. He can hang out with whoever he wants to hang out with. He could probably be with any sort of caste system if he decided to be, because of how intelligent he is. I think, you know, it's whether if he wants to or doesn't. And I think he's really focused on creating relationships. But how do you create relationships when you can't share who you are?
It's the classic messiah complex and situation that is echoed sometimes more explicitly than others. Okay, we suspect that Robin Pierce, who will be joining us later, will have his own perspectives on this. I don't think he's going to be as critical of this particular episode. I'm making this prediction ahead of the entry of Robin and Stephen Pierce. I don't think he's going to be as critical as he has been over the latest incarnation of Ant-Man and Wasp, Quantumania, which I believe he went on record as giving a 3 out of 10 for, which for Robin, again, you just wonder, maybe he didn't make the right decision in kind of avoiding Village of the Damned last week and doing a pre-record from that point of view, but we'll just have to wait and see. But nevertheless, Kathy, what is your score for the pilot episode of Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman?
I feel like I would like it more if I saw more episodes. I don't want to completely disregard it. But like I said already, I wasn't too engaged with this. I wasn't finding it too entertaining. I think to be as fair as possible, I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
Oh, you're in early. I like the beard, but the mustache isn't working for me. Want me to do it?
Oh. I nailed him cold.
All right.
Well, there we are, the views of Kathy Manso as far as this pilot episode by Deborah Joy Levine is concerned of Lois and Clark, the new adventures of Superman. Let's turn straight to a young soul who, I don't know, you might not have been born in 1993, but if you were, you would have been very young indeed. Stephen Pierce, welcome to Resonance Rewind. Your thoughts on this particular incarnation of Superman, and are you going to basically turn around and say, well, it gets more than a 3 out of 10, which was what my father gave Ant-Man and Quantumania.
Well, okay, to start with, Ant-Man Quantumania was just awful. Lois and Clark, I think it's one of the better adaptations of Superman. Because one of the things that drives me nuts with Superman when they do adaptations, especially in film, they spend so much time in Smallville as a child, and they don't give enough time to what happened when he went to Smallville. How did that work out? I just think that this one in particular is so strong. It's got comedic timing, especially some of Clark's lines are fantastic. I love how Lex Luthor, he's the right kind of villainous, but also really likable. Overall, I would say this is one of my preferred adaptations of the character.
Thumbs up for yourself, Stephen, quite clearly, which is interesting. Let's turn now to our ace director, of course. I mean, in many ways, I often viewed the director of this particular episode of The New Adventures of Superman as being an American version of Graham Harper, given the range of material that he actually covered. Robert Butler, of course, responsible for the pilot episodes of Star Trek, the original series. And as we noted, also covered the first Batman Adam West series as well, amongst various other things. So he certainly covered a lot of iconic figures. But Graham, what did you make of this particular incarnation of Superman back in 1993 when, let's face it, you would have been working on, I think, the joys of The Last Salute and probably the wonderful sort of Robert Powell and Jasper Carr. Anyway, you would have been doing lots of things, and splitting image, et cetera, in the interregnum between Doctor Who and other activities.
Yes, I wasn't doing action-packed stuff like that. Excuse me. I thought this was brilliant. I loved the double entendres all the way through. I thought the character, and I loved their relationship, which is going to build and build and build. I really would love to see the rest of the series. I thought it was brilliant. I'd love to have done it. I would like to have been part of that.
It may well happen in another universe, a quantum universe. We might well go there. But let's turn to Jessica Burtis. Jessica, likewise, possibly your first incarnation of the Dean Cain, Terry Hatcher vehicle, with, of course, a range of other folk, Lane Smith and others within the series. What did you make, Jessica, of the whole process?
I thought it was so good. I think that Lois and Superman are iconic, of course. They're one of the most famous, I feel like, comic superhero couples. And I really like getting to see a new iteration of them that I'd never seen before. And I feel like the actors in all of these roles, I feel like everyone was so well suited to who they were playing. And it was cool seeing Lex Luthor and seeing another villain in this episode with the plot twist I did not see coming. So I feel like it was really fun. I want to keep watching this show. I agree with Graham. I want to know what happens. I want to see the relationship continue and see how Superman kind of adjusts to being Superman now that he's not just Clark Kent.
Yes, of course, it's good to have both parents still alive and able to ensure that they can create costumes and all sorts of other factors as well. let's turn to Jenny Bill. Jenny, in many ways, you sort of epitomise the joys of superheroines in a whole range of ways. I mean, you've got the correct hair colour. It's all there. What are your thoughts on this one?
And I have superpowers as well, of course.
Is that to get the trains running on time?
That superpower I don't have, but the one that involves doing things on the ice, I'm quite good at that one. I'm not a huge fan of Superman. I know we've looked at some other Superman stuff before, and I've never seen any of this series. I have seen a little bit of Smallville. I do agree that this is very good. I mean, I didn't watch it and think, oh my goodness, this is awful. I cannot stand Lois Lane. It doesn't matter whether she's in the film or in the TV shows or anything. Her character just irritates me beyond belief. But the interaction between the actors was really good. The chemistry for everybody. Kat, I thought she was great. The whole thing, the pace of it was really good. I really liked the music. So for what it is, it's not my personal cup of tea, but for what it is, I think it was, probably the best Superman incarnation that I have seen.
Wow.
But I'm not an expert on Superman.
So obviously ahead of George Reeves in the 1950s, which you surprised me. He was running through walls in no end of episodes. Robin, back to yourself again, or first time actually turning to yourself. I know you were disappointed, shall we say, with the latest Marvel incarnation. I have found several people who have thoroughly enjoyed it, and it's an interesting debate which we'll have for another show for another time. But in terms of the superhero incarnation of Superman, again, 1993, a time where Deborah Levine initially was getting some flack in terms of the notion that she was going to go without a costume at all. And we had that sequence, of course, of costumes being made and so on. But as she said herself, when she was with the series, and she was very worried at the time because this was up against, at the time, Steven Spielberg's Sequest DSV, which we've also covered in previous times. That has been classified by critics as Voyage to the Bottom of the Ratings. Again, Jenny, I probably not agree with that. But you know, it was Steven Spielberg doing that. Nevertheless, it did actually do extraordinarily well in the figure in the ratings against Clark and Lois, Lois and Clark, The Adventures of Superman. And it took a lot of time before it began to pick up numbers. Your thoughts on the pilot, though, Robin?
Okay, as you know by now, I'm a big fan of superheroes, comic books, the whole thing. I am in all the way. Superhero adaptations, be it film, be it TV, I can either be a huge fan or I can be one of the harshest critics. Coming to Lois and Clark, I think it's important to remember that this is the first TV incarnation of Superman since the 1950s George Reeves series. And it's the first Superman we had seen since the Christopher Reeve film series. And what a hard act to follow. Taking Superman out of the equation, which this series certainly did more of in the first season, I think was a very bold move. Didn't take it as far back as Smallville would eventually, but I thought that the angle that they take of having it as a continuing series, but treating the Lois and Clark dynamic as almost a kind of romantic comedy, I thought was an extremely bold move. And I don't think that you could have done it with any better cast than what you got here. Dean Cain, when I first saw him, I thought, it's a skinny kid in a Superman costume.
He's Superboy.
Exactly. But then again, he's on the cusp of having been Superboy, perhaps, and coming to Metropolis for the first time. He's that missing link that we don't know much about. Lois Lane. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb and say something that I've been saying since 1993. Brace yourselves. Terry Hatcher is the best Lois Lane we have seen in any medium, be it movie serials, be it films, anywhere. Lois Lane is, to me, definitively played by Terry Hatcher. Nobody has done it better before or since. doubt anybody ever will, because she captures the strong sort of character, the strong, headstrong character who just gets into trouble. And she doesn't play the dewy-eyed damsel in distress. You know, she will give Clark Kent a hard time, just as she will give Superman a hard time. She just epitomizes what I believe Lois Lane should be like. Lane Smith, what a perfect Perry White. I mean, he's grumpy, he's hard to please, but he has a heart of gold. We find Jimmy Olsen nowhere near as annoying, heinously annoying, as any of the other on-screen adaptations that we've seen. This is just pitch perfect. If I could make one criticism, it's that the flying effects seem a little more primitive than even they did in the 1950s, apart from the first season where you had George Reeves lying on a glass table and his entire front would be flat. But you know, other than that, I think this is as near a perfect pilot for what was to become this amazing romantic comedy as you could ever get. I mean, I've watched it today for the first time in several years, and you know, I'm inspired to do a complete run through and dig all four box sets out.
Well, that's certainly at the heart of what we like to encourage with respect to Resonance Rewind, to actually see that connection. Graham, you've been listening to that. I mean, it's high praise indeed to Terry Hatcher, fine soul as she actually is, that she's ahead of Margot Kidder, who I felt she was kind of channeling, and also Amy Adams in recent years, both of whom have portrayed Lois Lane, as indeed has Noel Neal, and of course in the series Smallville, Erica Durant. So, I mean, again, these are iconic characters. These are characters like Sherlock Holmes, like Tarzan, that have been replayed, done many times, like, of course, Robin Hood, which you've directed, like, of course, Doctor Who, which, of course, we know you're legendary connected with. So what are your thoughts in terms of what you've heard so far?
Well, I agree with everybody. Do you know the thing that I loved about... the little details, like when he goes off to get Chinese food, we get a silly map with a little figure flying across the whole of America, across the Pacific, into Shanghai, and then it arrives seconds later with fantastic real Chinese food. But I loved the map, the Spielberg map. It was brilliant. I thought that was a wonderful touch. I just loved the... And Mum making costumes for Superman. I just thought that was extraordinary. Really, really funny and very silly. And didn't make it childish. It didn't make it lousy or silly. It was just a lovely, silly moment.
I think it was screened around about the 5:15 p.m. mark on Saturdays. The BBC actually screened them originally over here. So it was obviously looking to follow that traditional Saturday adventure format. Jessica, again, returning back to yourself, any sort of key aspects that stood out for you? I mean, given the villainous nature of John Shea's incarnation of Lex Luthor, I did think that the outstaring the Cobra as a nice exercise with his butler was quite an interesting scene.
I think what stood out to me was just how convinced I was that they were playing their characters. I feel like in some shows you tend to see the actors a bit more than the characters, but I feel like in this I wasn't really pulled out of the show much. I think that this iteration of Lois, and I haven't seen a ton of Superman movies, but I think that she was so interesting, and just seeing both of them kind of having their own goals and ideals, I liked that they weren't just basing this whole show around him having superpowers, that they were more than that, and that there were like outside motivations happening. But I like that it wasn't all just like life and death situations with supervillains. I like that there was him just struggling to get hired for a writing job and things like that, that feel very realistic. And I like that they kind of showed that just normal, very relatable side to this very super story. I think it made it easier to kind of get into.
In the DVD commentary. Yes, Graham, go on.
Just another thing to add to it was I loved, there was a moment when they're at the function, and he gets very upset by the guy talking to Lois, and he slowly rises up about 3 feet off the ground, and there's a guy behind him who didn't notice anything. I just found that extraordinary and very funny. Well, he was obviously involved in the goings on. It was just delightful, really, really nice, fun.
I think addressing Robin's comment earlier, this apparently, although Robert Butler had had a lot of experience in American television, was the first time he'd ever worked with green screen, and likewise Deborah Levine. So I think they were finding their feet in terms of the effects aspect. But it was also interesting that Deborah Levine was also keen to say that they were wanting to keep the will they, won't they aspect of Lois and Clark going a lot longer than effectively they did. She felt that if they actually keep that uncertainty going, they would have lasted 6 or 7 seasons. A bit like Moonlighting. We referred to that with Kathy earlier, Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd's character, obviously without superpowers then. Stephen, your thoughts so far then, again, now you've had a chance to listen to the team and get a flavour in terms of the vibe and so on.
One of the things that really stood out for me in the series is from the comics. You always have Superman running off to change from Clark Kent to Superman. And, you know, he'll go into a closet or a telephone booth. Nothing's ever really made of it. What I loved that they did in this was there was a scene where he went into a closet and Perry White turns up and asks him, what are you doing in the closet? Why are you there? Another scene that I really did like was his glasses, when his dad asks him, you know, you need to do something with your face to, you know, have a disguise. The look his dad gives him when he just says, I'll put the glasses on, it's fine, no one will notice. Really well done.
Yeah. No, it works that. And of course, we also had the wonderful nod back to up there in the sky. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's a guy in tights with a cape. Worked well in terms of the announcement of the whole thing. Yeah, Robin, again, in terms of the sort of connection, I mean, because this was probably, if you take out The Incredible Hulk, one of the, and Kenneth Johnson's involved with respect to that, the first time that serious television incarnations of comic book incarnations, which were long lasting, I'm not including Spider-Man or Doctor Strange or any of the other attempts that have worked through that to get through the whole thing. Do you feel it worked, or was it a case of, well, I'm a DC fan and this is a good incarnation of Batman's best friend?
I think it very, very much worked. I was interested, you know, you mentioned BBC showing it at about 5:15, and I remember that very well because I used to videotape them, and they played down the Lois and Clark in the Radio Times and called it The New Adventures of Superman, in case nobody knew who Lois and Clark were.
Or they thought they were going to have a series about the American discoverers and mapmakers, Lewis and Clark. It was easily confused.
They kind of downplayed it as a children's show. But I think that from season 2 onwards, it was bought by Sky, who put it on the 8 p.m. till 9 p.m. spot midweek. And, you know, gave it its proper title. And, you know, I think that, if anything, in the UK, maybe it kind of missed its mark a little bit. Its target audience, should we say, with the BBC having maybe trivialized it as a children's show. But it's certainly anything but, because some of the lines in it, for example, Clark Kent's mother saying, you know, sort of, they're not going to be looking at your face in that outfit, which I thought was a really good line. But I think my favorite line in the whole thing is, I mean, you've got the mounting tension between Luther, exquisitely played, underplayed, if anything, and, you know, Superman, and Luthor is used to having his penthouse in the tallest building, and he looks down at everybody, and Superman tells him, if you want to find me, look up. And I thought, that is such a cool line. Absolutely such a cool line. And I think it was at that point I had bought Dean Cain as Clark Kent from the second he stepped off the bus. Same with Lois Lane. But I think it was the delivery of that line just floating there that actually sold me Dean Cain as also a credible Superman. Because my big problem with Superman films, now you've got me ranting, even Christopher Reeve, is Christopher Reeve was a fantastic Superman. No doubt about it. Maybe the best ever. However, when it came to Clark Kent, he was a big, hulking, muscular guy trying to wear a normal suit. And if I found it hard to believe that nobody could actually think, you know, okay, if you're buying into Superman, you buy into the whole glasses thing. But he's this massive, muscle-bound guy in a suit who acts like he'd faint if he saw a spider. But this is not the case in Dean Cain. And they wisely stayed away from muscle suits as well. So they could play both of them, I thought.
Apparently, also, the reason we don't hear Perry White utter the immortal words, "Great Caesar's ghost," is because when Lane Smith was actually cast as the actor, given a more southern approach, they felt that Great Shades of Elvis was a better exposition as opposed to Great Caesar's ghost. Okay, Jessica, let's come to you for favourite characters. So far, Kathy actually mentioned in the earlier segment of the programme that her award would go to Kay Callan and Eddie Jones in terms of Martha and Jonathan Kent as Superman's parents. What about yourself? Are you going to go with that? Are you going to go outside to maybe Elizabeth Barondes as Lucy Lane, Tracy Scoggins as Cat Grant, Kim Johnson Ulrich, of course, as the visitor, the villainous Dr. Antoinette Baines? Or could it be Star Trek alumnus Persis Kambata as the United Nations chairperson? Notice I've actually cited a whole range of female cast there. And I think it's worth noting that with Deborah Joy Lorene writing it, this certainly addresses a lot of issues which said, no, Hollywood never actually tried to actually have any sort of balance agendas until long into currently the 2020s. Anyway, Jessica.
I mean, Lois and Clark were like the best characters for me because I think they just made me like these iconic characters even more. And I hadn't expected that. I thought it was just going to be like kind of a run-of-the-mill Superman show. But Lois just is so independent. And I think that balanced really well with the way that they portrayed Clark as being kind of like playful. He's not extremely serious. And I think that actually suits his character very well because he seems like he can kind of have a laugh. He would poke fun at Lois a little bit at her being so serious. And I thought that that played very well off of each other. And it just made me want to like watch the show for the main characters. And I usually never like main characters. I tend to like the side characters a lot more. But I think too, like he's Superman. I remember in school when we were doing vocab tests and we had to learn the word paragon, and our like example for what a paragon is was Superman. And I've always like remembered that word with him. So I think it's just like this iconic hero, but this show made me appreciate him a bit more.
So Dean Cain as Superman, the paragon of virtue, gets your award then.
Yep.
All right, let's move to Graham. Who was your favourite character in the particular adventure?
They all were, but I absolutely love Mum and Dad, and I love their relationship with him and him with them, and the fact they wanted to keep the secret, try and help him to stop revealing who he, you know, make a mistake. I thought it was really, really charming. Very nice.
Okay.
I loved the editor. The editor was just brilliant.
Lane Smith, doing a whole range of things. I think he went on to play Richard Nixon, if memory serves, and in other ways. And the sort of signs there when he says, just the facts, just bring me the facts, which is always critical. Although I think that was also attributed to the original system. Robin, are you going Michael Landis and Jimmy Olsen? I mean, or are you going to go for Terry Hatcher as Lois Lane? Or are you going to surprise us and maybe go for Dr. Platt, of course,
Played by Kenneth Tiger? Last week, when this question came up, I really didn't have a favourite character because I didn't really feel that anybody really merited a favourite character. But in this, it's
George Saunders,
so
surely.
Hard. No, I went with the evil kid, if you recall. It's so hard to actually pick a favourite in this. But I've got to go with Jess, because if you don't buy into Dean Cain as Clark Kent, Terry Hatcher as Lois Lane, then the whole thing falls apart. The whole thing rests on their shoulders. Yes, it's in part kind of an ensemble show, but you've got to give it to those two. And I will actually go a little bit further and say that Terry Hatcher as Lois Lane nudges ahead because of that exquisite performance. She kept up for, 4 years?
And then went on to appear with Pierce Brosnan in Tomorrow Never Dies and eventually become a desperate housewife. But, you know, all continues in all sorts of ways. Jenny, your thoughts or favourite character?
I agree with everything that Graham said. I really liked the mum and dad, and I really liked their relationship, and I liked the relationship that they had with their son. What I really loved, which was like a total random scene, was the lady in the theatre when he went to that theatre, and the lady in the theatre that was reading those lines, and then she gave that absolutely fabulous speech. And I was totally moved by that scene. And I kept thinking all the way through, what was that random scene that really seemed to have nothing else to do with it, other than obviously it gave him the opportunity to write this great story and then get a job. But yeah, I'm going to give it to that lady because she was
so fabulous. Gloria Leroy is the actress who, of course, began her career on stage in vaudeville. She started quoting from the Cherry Orchard in the theatre, and of course there was the line there about not tearing the theatre down for the want of a car park and so on. Yeah, I think that's actually a good choice, and well done for actually identifying that, because Beatrice, who is her name, the character, the name of the character, probably does need to be identified, just as we say Asabi, the butler who provides obviously cobras on demand to Lex Luthor, played by Sean Taub, is also well worth noting. Stephen, that leaves your good self then.
I'd have to agree with Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher. The one thing that I really did like in particular with Lois Lane in this compared to other adaptations was she wasn't waiting for Superman to save her when she'd go on assignments. She was going to go anyway. And I would say Terry Hatcher probably is more ahead because she's exactly like she was in the comics.
Yeah. Of course, there was a long-running comic series, which was all branded Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane. Graham, you probably were doing far too many busy things to be locked into that. Were you a Superman fan as a child, though, Graham?
No, not really. I mean, yeah. I remember the three movies, and I liked them. I thought they were really good because they
four,
were...
But the fourth one obviously fell off the whole system in terms of Christopher Reeve. But, you know, that was the quest for peace.
Yes. Well, I didn't see it.
No.
another aspect of it that I thought was I missed when they got blown out of the store they were in, blew up, and they get flying out. I didn't see the moment where he grabbed hold of the boy and brought him out too, the junior reporter. But yeah, the three of them were, he managed to get the other guy out as well. I missed him actually. I didn't see that. All I saw was the two of them running out or flying out against the explosion.
It was a blink and you'll miss it moment. It is actually there, but it's almost there. Yeah, it is there. But one can appreciate that there was a challenge with respect to that. And as I say, not necessarily the finest example of green screen carrying from that. Although they did land in a puddle, so you could actually say that, yes, he was true to keeping the identity secret. So it basically could have followed that story that they'd been blown out as the force of the explosion rather than actually landing at, you know, halfway around the world, etc., which would have been much more impactful. It can also be said that in many ways, before we go around to timings, that the character of Lex Luthor, of course, foreshadows a combination of the likes of Jeff Bezos, the likes of Musk and Elon, etc., and indeed, arguably, Rupert Murdoch himself from that point of view, with a bit of Donald Trump thrown in, really.
Leaving Donald Trump out of this. He is a real life supervillain if ever one existed.
And indeed likes to actually build Trump Towers so high that the people have to look up to see him. Anyway, enough of such banter. Let's move on to marks. Jessica, what's your mark out of 10 for this particular entry?
I think the show is a 9 for me. I really enjoyed it, and I desperately want to watch more.
I have it at about an 8. I might go 8.5. Kathy, as the listener will have already heard, but I reveal now, actually, less success. She was a 5. Anyway, Stephen.
I'd agree with Jessica, a 9, definitely.
Graham?
Well, I'd have to give it a 10 on the basis that I'll bet it absolutely promoted a huge audience for the next viewing. But if it didn't, I've got somewhere to go.
Yeah, this is true. Jenny?
I think I'll give it a 6.
Still one more than Kathy Manso.
Honestly, Graham, that's quite good from me.
I love it.
It's normally a battle between Robin and Jenny in terms of who goes for the curmudgeonly title, but I think Kathy's, you know, probably winning at this one. Robin?
You know, I haven't been curmudgeonly in weeks. I'm.
And then you saw Ant-Man.
Oh, Ant-Man. Oh, yeah, that was brilliant. Thank you.
Watch it and weep.
It got anyway. So many good reviews.
Not from me, it
I know. Red, it was brilliant.
Anyway, on to your score for Clark and Lois, please. Or Lois and Clark.
Who, me?
Yes.
Yeah, 9.
9. Excellent. 9. Next week, we still stick with the second part of what really is a Superman trilogy-esque. We go back to Smallville, strange enough, because the title of the show is Smallville. It's the opening episode of Smallville with, of course, Tom Welling in the line as the young Clark Kent. No sign of Lois Lane in the opening episode, but we do see Lana Lang and a whole range of other activities taking place, obviously, in this town, which sees a teenage Lex Luthor, of course, with a teenage Clark Kent, and indeed a lot of other biblical or epical things as well. So that's to come. Meanwhile, to Graham Harper, our award-winning director. Actually, Graham, would you ever consider doing directing a Superman movie or TV show as and when they come up?
Not many, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Will. Good.
Excellent. It won't happen. Brilliant.
No, we're putting it out there. It's
thank you very much.
Can I be a super villain, please?
Yes. Look at it. You, that's brilliant.
No, you already are. Jenny Bill, Jessica Burtis, Stephen Pierce, Robin Pierce, and of course, earlier Kathy Manso. Many thanks. Keep on resonating.